in my hometown, my grandparents are the ones who own the telephone company, and my parents managed it for them when I was growing up. And on occasion, they would be without a cleaning lady. So on occasion, my dad would take his tour, and he would be the cleaning lady for a while. And my junior and my sophomore year of high school, I was the cleaning lady. And they had a break room that was about a 50 by 50 room, and it had one of those tile floors. And I decided that I was going to wax that tile floor. And this was before they had a buffer. So I was hands and knees scrubbing that and getting all of the old wax up and all of the scuff marks up. And I spent a whole Saturday there doing it, and I got it waxed. And boy, I just stood back and I just admired my handiwork. I tell you, that was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. It was an amazing work of art. And Saturday evening, I finally finished up and I walked. I actually even called my mom and I told my mom to come look. And she stood there and she examined it too, and she was in agreement with me. That is the best thing you've done in your life. I can't believe you had that in you. I'm very impressed. Amazing. Monday morning, mind you, my wax 2 days old. Monday morning, they decided to rearrange the office. And instead of that 50 by 50 room just being a break room, they decided to bring the three managers' desks in. My dad is one of those managers, the general manager. Brought his desk in. You'd think he would have held off for me, but he didn't. The shop manager and the plant manager, they both brought their desks in as well. And I tell you what, my perfect looking floor was full of black marks and skid marks and scuff marks and piles of wax where they scraped it up. It's heartbroken. It lasted 2 days. Still not over. This morning, we come to the last leg of our journey through Nehemiah. And this morning, we consider Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 15 through 31. And in this passage, we see Nehemiah taking steps to get Israel back on track, to get them back to where he had left them. You see, he had brought in some steps of reformation. He brought some reform to the nation of Israel. And he left to go back to Persia. And when he returned, he found a mess. We saw part of that last week, but here this morning, we see some more of this need for cleansing to take place. We see some more violations, if you will, of all of the reform that Nehemiah has brought to Israel. And so this morning, as we dive into Nehemiah chapter 13, verses For in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I went to the king, and after some time, I asked leave of the king. So he spent 12 and they're beginning to worship God as they should be worshiping God. And then Nehemiah left some people in charge, and he went away. And after he left, we don't know how long he's gone, but after he left, everything in Jerusalem seemed to go south. Nehemiah had to come back, and Nehemiah had to restore everything. He had to set things straight. Nehemiah was willing to come back and set things straight. He was willing to come back and stand in the gap. Even though those leaders that he left in charge were just kind of hands off, letting it go south, Nehemiah came back and he was willing to be the bad guy. He was willing to stand and say, this is not right. And so we see Nehemiah coming back. And look at verse 15. He says, I saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath, bringing in heaps of grain and loading them on donkeys, and also wine and grapes and figs and all kinds of loads which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. Now, this was another one of those items that Nehemiah addressed. It was another one of those items that Nehemiah brought reform to, because Israel had forsaken the Sabbath day. They had left it behind. And Nehemiah came in and restored the Sabbath and encouraged them and got everything back on track. So Sabbath practice was being practiced again. But the Sabbath day, once again, is being ignored. And Nehemiah sees that upon his return. The people of Israel and the leaders had made a covenant in Nehemiah chapter 10 that they would not forget the Sabbath, that they would not stop, that they wouldn't stop observing the Sabbath. This is verse 31 of Nehemiah 10. And if the peoples of the lands bring in goods or any grain on the Sabbath day to sell, we will not buy from them on the Sabbath or on a holy day. And we will forgo the crops of the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. So Nehemiah returns, and he finds that this covenant had already been broken. This covenant was not being followed. Even though we saw them, all the leaders signed that covenant, yet it was rejected. And Nehemiah comes, and he sees it, and he points it out to them. Verse 15 continues. He says, and I warned them on the day when they sold food. Tyrians also who lived in the city brought in fish and all kinds of goods and sold them on the Sabbath to the people of Judah in Jerusalem itself. So Ty, he even lived in the city. It was even something that was observed there. And he went outside of the city, purchased the fish, and brought the fish back, seeking to sell. They brought in all these heaps of grain. They made wine on this day. They loaded on the donkeys. They did all of that. And they worked as if it was just another day, completely forsaking the Sabbath. Now, notice what happens here. Nehemiah observes all of this. But notice what he does in verse 17. Then I confronted the nobles of Judah, and I said to them, what is this evil thing that you are doing, profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers act in this way? And did not your God bring all this disaster on us and on this city? Now you are bringing more wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath. Notice that Nehemiah goes to the leaders first, because the leaders are the one who should have known better. The leaders should have been the one that said, no, guys, this cannot happen. I signed that covenant saying we would not do that. Guess what? We are not going to do that. But the leaders did not do that. The leaders let down their guard and they allowed it to happen. They allowed it to happen right under their noses. And Nehemiah reminds them that this is exactly why we have all of these problems, because our forefathers in the past refused to hold strong to the Sabbath. And they allowed all of this work and all of this selling to take place. And notice what he says there, verse 18. Did not your fathers act in the way, and did not your God bring all this disaster on us? Now you are bringing more wrath. You are bringing it twofold. Because we've learned our lesson. We know the facts. But yet we are going right back and following the same path. We should not be doing this. You should have known better. Now, you would think that Nehemiah, after saying that, getting it all off his chest, would just feel better, and now go back to Persia. Okay? It's all on you guys. Good luck. May the force be with you. That would be a great opportunity for him to do that. But notice verse 19. As soon as it began to grow dark at the gates of Jerusalem, before the Sabbath, I commanded that the doors should be shut and gave orders that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. And I stationed some of my servants at the gates that no load might be brought in on the Sabbath day. Nehemiah doesn't leave them there to fend for themselves. Nehemiah takes action. Nehemiah steps up. And he says, don't do what I say, but do what I do and say. And he puts down his foot. He takes the steps to make sure that the Sabbath is observed. He commanded that the gates be shut. He commanded that they remain shut. And he puts his own servants there to make sure the gates stay shut. We don't know, but maybe the other gatekeepers, maybe they took a bribe. Maybe they said, yeah, that's all good, but yeah, 100,000, I'll open them up. Nehemiah's guys are there to make sure there's no funny business. And the gates stay closed. Without the Sabbath day, without the observance of the Sabbath day, without Israel having that day to stop what they're doing and look to God, without that day, they were beginning to drift away. That's how important the Sabbath day was to keep them from drifting. You know, we don't observe the Sabbath day, but you know, we do observe Sundays. Sunday is a day that we celebrate the resurrection. Isn't it amazing? And I'd love to tell you that I just read about this. But isn't it amazing how easy it is for us to slip away in our walk with Christ when we miss a Sunday or two or three or four? It's amazing the impact that has on us as we do this. I was reading this week, and Voltaire has a quote. He was a French agnostic. And he said this: if you want to kill Christianity, you must abolish Sunday. Well, I think that's so true as I think about that impact in my own life. Because in my own life, when I take away Sundays and I just make Sunday look like any other day, then pretty soon I look just like the world. Pretty soon I'm drifting away from God. And like I shared last week, when my Public worship suffers. My private worship is right behind it. And when my private worship suffers, I'm terrible to live with. It's not a good thing. I begin to look just like the rest of the world. And Nehemiah comes in and he says, guys, this should not to happen. This shouldn't be taking place. Because when we forget the Sabbath, when we forget the observance of God, we forget God. Now, notice what happens next in verse 20. Then the merchants and the sellers of all kinds of wares lodged outside of Jerusalem once or twice. So the merchants hear these new rules. The gates are going to remain closed on the Sabbath. The merchants and the sellers, they don't think this is going to last. They may make this rule, but it's going to be temporary. They're going to cave. They made it once before, and they caved. They're going to cave again. This is just a temporary thing. So they sat outside the walls. The smell of that rotisserie chicken gets them every time, doesn't it? Do you think there's a reason that's stationed at the front of the grocery store? I walk in there. I'm just here for butter. I smell rotisserie chicken. Who needs butter? It's already rotisserated. And I can eat that chicken by myself because of that aroma. So these guys are outside of the walls and they're drifting it up. You ever gone to the ball field and smelled those roasted almonds? And I don't even like almonds. I'm buying them. Gotta have them. One of my oldest son, one of his favorite things to do was to go to a ball game for his birthday. And so he picked a day, and hey, that's great, that's good. And for some reason, I wasn't even thinking about it, but I decided that I was going to go on a fast, and I was fasting that same week. You know how hard it is to be fasting and you're smelling those almonds roasting by the makeshift fire? That's almost impossible. So they're outside the walls, and they're saying they don't want us inside. But you know what? Let them smell this. Let them see that we're out here. And those gates will open up. Those gates will open up. But look at verse 21. But I warned them, and I said to them, why do you lodge outside the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you. From that time on, they did not come on the Sabbath. Now, Nehemiah took these preventive steps. He saw them outside waiting. Nehemiah didn't ignore them. He confronted them. It says he laid hands on them, and that doesn't mean that he was going to pray for them. He was serious about this. He knew the danger that this was. And because of that danger, he was going to take care of it. He was going to remove the temptation. And that's exactly what he did. And from that time on, they didn't come around on the Sabbath. Message sent, message received. We don't know about the physical stature of Nehemiah. But Nehemiah was such a man of his word that when he took this stand, people knew that he was serious. They didn't think he was going to cave. He said, no. And his no meant no. It wasn't one of those things that they could sweet talk Nehemiah. Because the word of God says no, it's going to be no. And Nehemiah wasn't willing to budge. And the people left. Now, Nehemiah could have said, hey, you know what? That's good enough. I've told you to stop. I've took steps to make sure the gates remain closed. I've driven off all of the temptations. That's enough. But that wasn't enough. Look at verse 22. Then I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves and come and guard the gates to keep the Sabbath day holy. You know what's crazy about this? This was the job of the Levites. They were to be gatekeepers. Nehemiah had his guys in place, but he says, this is your job. You guys need to be doing this. So purify yourselves. This purification was a renewal. It was a repentance. It was a turning back to God. Make yourselves right with God. Go through the purification ceremony. Offer up a sacrifice for your sins. Make yourselves right with God once again. And then get back to work. You do the job that you're supposed to do. That's what Nehemiah does. Challenges them. Commands them. Tells them to turn back. Helps them. Puts them in place so they do that. Now look at verse 22. It says, remember this also in my favor, O my God, and spare me according to the greatness of your steadfast love. I think this is such an amazing thing that this would be included here. Nehemiah prays for himself in this circumstance. Nehemiah is seeking to make sure that where he is, God is with him. Nehemiah is not wanting to act out and to be his own dictator. Nehemiah is seeking to make sure his relationship here is okay. He's trying to help them make sure their relationship here is okay, but he wants to make sure his relationship is okay. And so that's what we see him doing. And as we think about him being willing to stand in the gap, he is drawing from the strength of God. Do you know how hard it is to stand alone? Sometimes, when others around us are looking like the world, standing alone is a difficult thing. We need strength. We need help. Nehemiah knows that. Where is his help coming from? It's not going to be from here. He's not concerned about being strengthened here. His strength is here. And that's what's going to keep him from compromising. That's what's going to keep him where he needs to be. So he confronts this Sabbath day violation. But notice he also confronts the marriage violations that are taking place. Verse 23 continues. It says, in those days also. This begins the new section. And again, he's making reference to that time when he returned. I saw the Jews who had married women of Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. Back in chapter 10, there was a covenant that was made. Back in chapter 10, those leaders signed it. Nehemiah chapter 10, verse 30 says this, we will not give our daughters to the peoples of the land or take their daughters for our sons. Now, this was not a call for racial segregation. This was a call for them to remain true, to remain faithful to the one true God. Religious compromise had a negative impact. And if they chose to ignore their religious differences, marrying those people who worshiped other gods, they would be drawn away, thinking that the spouse would come around eventually. But what they were doing was inviting destruction into their marriages. They were inviting destruction destruction into the nation of Israel. Because it was going to cause a drifting away. But instead of staying and remaining true to the one true God, they drifted away. They drifted away. And there's already evidence of this impact. Look at verse 24. Half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod, and they could not speak the language of Judah, but only the language of each people. There was already this culture change that was taking place in Israel. They were already moving away from their Jewish heritage. And you know what's so strongly rooted in their Jewish heritage? The worship of the one true God. But instead, they were moving away from that, moving towards following the gods of the other nations, following their practices of worship, following their holy days, drifting away from their own holy days. And as a result of this, the people of Israel were beginning to look more and more like the world around them, because they stopped following the one true God. Jesus speaks about this in Matthew 5, verse 13. He says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste, how shall saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet." Israel had lost their saltiness. They had intermarried, they had intermingled, they had blended in with the world. And when that happens, they lost their saltiness. And the same is true of us. When we blend in with the world, when we drift away from the one true God, when we drift away from the Word of God, we lose our saltiness. We look like the rest of the world. We wonder why people aren't turning to Christ, because we're not offering anything different. We have no hope because we've drifted away from our hope. We're looking to other things, seeking other things to bring us hope. We look just like the world. We have lost our saltiness. Nehemiah confronted them, and this is not a gentle confrontation either. I confronted them, I cursed them, and I beat some of them. I pulled out their hair, and I made them take an oath in the name of God, saying, "You shall not give your daughters to their sons, or take their daughters for your sons, or for yourselves." Nehemiah is serious about this. This was no small white infraction. You know, sometimes we have that mindset, well, it's just a white lie. It's not that good. It's not that big. You know, it's just bent the truth a little. Nehemiah doesn't see it that way. This is pretty harsh treatment that we see him partaking in here. Now, as we look at this, Deuteronomy speaks about beating. They see that as in Deuteronomy, it's a judicial punishment for doing wrong. And maybe that's what Nehemiah did, was a judicial punishment of doing wrong. Ezra speaks about those who were guilty of sin having to shave their heads, having to shave their beards, so there would be shame in that. Maybe this is part of the reference that Nehemiah is speaking of here. But this is no small matter. This is no small thing. If he physically did this or not, there was a penalty to be paid here. And Nehemiah made sure it was that way. That's how serious sin was. Sometimes when we see sin, we don't see it as that serious. Eventually they'll get over it. It'll happen. But this is a serious confrontation of sin. Nehemiah saw the sin, and Nehemiah punished the sin. Now, I think as we look at this, I think it's important for us to recognize that he sees this sin, he punishes this sin, but this sin is not among unbelievers. This sin is among the people of Judah who, quote unquote, were following the one true God. We talked about this on Wednesday nights a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was this last Wednesday. Did Wednesday end in Y? Yeah, it could have been this last one. When we look at God, when we look at Jesus and his ministry on earth, unbelievers, Jesus had compassion for them. He confronted their sin. Remember the adulterous woman? He said, go and sin no more. He didn't say, it's okay, girl, do what you want. He said, go and sin no more. So he confronted her sin, but we see him compassionately speaking to her. When Jesus confronted the religious leaders who should have known better, he was not so kind. He was not so compassionate because they should have known better. These people should have known better. And Nehemiah was harsh in his confrontation. Notice what he says in verse 26. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin on account of such women? Among the many nations, there was no king like him. And he was beloved by his God. And God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, foreign women made even him to sin. Nehemiah reminds them of Solomon's choice. Solomon had everything. Solomon was the king of Israel. And when we read about Solomon's reign as king, Israel experienced peace in every direction. Under Solomon's reign, Israel was as big as it's ever been. It had more landmass than it's ever had in that time. Solomon had it really good. But Solomon came crashing down. He did not heed the warning. And Nehemiah uses him as an illustration. Uses him as an illustration. You know there's that story that's in your family that reminds everybody about a circumstance. And whenever they're telling a story, they'll use that as an illustration. And you're like, yeah, I remember Weird Uncle Harold. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's fitting. That's fitting. That applies. Very good. Yeah, I see that picture. That's exactly what he does here. You guys remember Solomon? Yeah, so fitting for this. That's so fitting for this. Look at verse 27. He shares a recipe for destruction. Shall we then listen to you and do all this great evil, act treacherously against our God by marrying foreign women? One of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was the son-in-law of Sanballat, the Horonite. Therefore, I chased him from me. Remember them, O my God, because they have desecrated the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. This recipe for destruction is what Israel was following, just like Solomon did. The tale of destruction goes before them, but yet they were following the same recipe, step by step. What made the matter worse? Even the priests, even the religious leaders were practicing the same thing. Why is Israel in a downward spiral? Because our leaders are leading us in this downward spiral. The priesthood was desecrated as a result. Now look at verse 30. Thus, I cleanse them from everything foreign. I establish the duties of the priests and the Levites each in his work. And I provided for the wood offering at the appointed times and for the first fruits. Nehemiah cleansed this mess and reestablished the priesthood. He reestablished the wood provision. Remember how we saw that the wood provision for the sacrifices wasn't being brought? Nehemiah got that restored, and now he's restoring it. The gathering of the first fruits, the gathering of the tithes that went to the Levites, that had been forsaken. Levites had left town and went out and worked their own fields. Now Nehemiah is reestablishing that gathering of the first fruits as well. Nehemiah wants them to be where they should be as the nation of Israel. Back under the blessing of God. That's where he wants them to be. That's where they need to be. That's where they should be. Walking in obedience. And that's what Nehemiah wants. And notice what happens in verse 31. Nehemiah again prays. Remember me, O my God, for good. You know, as we have made our journey through the book of Nehemiah, one of the things that we have seen remain consistent is Nehemiah and his walk with God. Nehemiah and his walk with God. He was always looking to God. He was always seeking to please God. And his desire is for God to remember him as faithful. So remember him as faithful. Lord, see that I'm faithful. Now, Nehemiah knows that God knows all things. So Nehemiah is not going to be unfaithful and then pray, God, remember me as faithful. That's what I do with my folks. Remember how good a kid I was? No, don't. I don't remember that. When was that? Well, it was Christmas Eve, 1978. I was really good that day. I can remember. I worked extra hard. Nehemiah says, God, remember that I'm faithful. Because Nehemiah had been striving to be faithful. Nehemiah was striving to be obedient. And that's where he desired to be. And that's his prayer. Lord, help me. Help me in this. Remember when Darcy and I were married, we went to this church, and this pastor, I'm not a very good judge of age, but I would guess he was at least 100, 125 years old. I mean, I don't know how he made it to the pulpit. He had one of those thick Bibles. I don't know how he carried that thing up there every week. I'd have just left it on the pulpit. But he prayed almost every week. He prayed that he would finish the race strong. I'm like, you're 125 years old, man. You don't have a chance. You're not going downhill fast. You don't have like a lot of hope not to finish strong because gravity's taking you that way. But you know, it was so amazing to think about that. That was his desire. He wasn't concerned about how he started the race. He was more concerned about how he finished the race. And here is Nehemiah finishing the race. This is the last verse of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah desires that God would find him faithful. That God would find him faithful. You know, we don't know where we are in our journey. We may be here today, and we may be 10 years old. We have no idea how long our journey is. We might be here and be really old, like 29. We have no idea how long our journey is going to be. But you know, it should be our desire to finish strong, to finish the race that's been set before us. And finish it sprinting. Finish it running hard for Jesus. That should be our desire. So there you have it. Nehemiah confronting the Sabbath violations and confronting the marriage violations. So what do we take home from this? What do we apply to our lives? I think as we look at this, I can't help but look at Nehemiah and just see a man who was willing to stand in the gap. He was willing to stand in the gap. He was gone for a while. He came back. He could have said, you know what? You guys are on your own. I pointed you in the right direction. It's not my fault. You know, blame it on your parents. It's not my fault. But Nehemiah didn't do that. He was willing to stand in the gap. And he was willing to call sin, sin. And that's exactly what he did. Nehemiah's concern was not to please this way. Nehemiah's concern was to please this way. And you know what? No matter what day and age we live in, this is always going to change. But this is never going to change. And Nehemiah knew that. And that's what Nehemiah desired. And you know what? Sometimes we're going to stand in the gap. Sometimes we're going to stand alone. But you know what? When we stand alone, we're not really standing alone, are we? Because the Lord is with us. And so when we take our stand, it's a whole lot better for us to stand with Him than to stand with them. And I think we need to be aware of a slippery slope. You know, as you look at the people of Israel here, they probably didn't just set out to blatantly disobey God. But you know, they just took one little step, and one little step, and one little step. We used to hunt often on rock slides. And when you're walking down a rock slide, if you're careful and just follow the trails, you usually do pretty good. But when you don't pay attention and you step on the wrong rock, there is a chance it's your slip and slide. It's a slippery slope. Because once a few rocks give, then more rocks give, and away you go. And it's the same as when we live the Christian life. We've got to be careful where we step. We've got to be careful where we walk. Because there are those places, those slippery slopes that we're on, where we can slip away. We've got to be careful. Let's pray.